This is the Masterful Art of Self-Care, a podcast where we offer a community and safe space to bring awareness, educate, empower, and be an advocate on the ways that we can break the stigma of self-care from others. This is an etude by Wallace, your host. Welcome. Welcome, and thank you for joining me on this episode of the Masterful Art of Self-Care. So this is episode 46, and today I have a very special guest. Her name is Jessica Drummond. And she is the founder of an organization called the Integrative Women's Health Institute. And in addition to that, she's also a physical therapist and she's also a functional nutritionist. And I'll read her bio in just a little bit, but she is someone who is just very much about integration and collaborative effort with regards to a woman's health. And it was through her that I learned about the Women's Health Coaching Program, which I am currently in and, you know, just about to finish it up, hopefully by the end of this year. But she just has like a really great wealth of information and a lot of experience. So she has about 2 decades of experience in women's and pelvic health as a physical therapist and functional nutritionist. Plus, she owns her own private women's health, clinical nutrition, and coaching practice, which gives her a very unique perspective on the integrative, conservative options for common women's health conditions. Dr. Drummond specializes in working with adolescent girls and women with pelvic pain, which includes endometriosis, vulvodynia, interstitial cystitis, pelvic floor dysfunction, pudendal neuralgia, as well as many others, hormonal imbalances, PCOS, preconception and fertility support, postpartum recovery, and general chronic pain and fatigue management. So we definitely go into not all of this, but we definitely go into some facets of pelvic pain, some basic issues that especially postpartum mothers, you know, definitely deal with in regards to the hormonal balances, in regards to stress, in regards to sleep and their nutrition. So all of that. And how self-care, you know, can play a really big role. And then she tells, you know, her own story of what she has had gone through herself, like after having her children, in regards to like what her self-care was like and, you know, still being a PT and running her own business and also taking care of herself. So, you know, definitely it's always a constant battle. It's a juggle in order to maintain that balance or that harmony. It's definitely doable, but realizing, you know, what is needed in order to make that happen. So I really hope you enjoy this episode. And before we jump into it, just want to mention that after this episode, there will be one more, which actually will be the season 3 closer. And I will be taking a break, about a 2-week break for Christmas. And also I will be starting my new job as a physical therapist. Yay. So I'm really excited about that. And I will just share some things on that season 3 closer about what to expect for season 4. So there will be some changes, obviously, because now I will not have that same amount of time and flexibility that I used to have. But I will still continue to be putting out podcasts. It'll just be on not an every week basis, but an every other week basis. But hopefully now that I will be in the clinic and I will be practicing as a PT, I'll definitely have more experience, more knowledge, more things to be able to share with you. So I'm really excited to be able to bring that to all of you. So without further ado, Dr. Drummond. All right. Thank you for listening, joining in on the Masterful Art of Self-Care podcast. And today I have a special guest and her name is Jessica Drummond. And I've been following her for quite a long time. I'm actually a student of hers doing the women's health coaching right now. And luckily I had an opportunity to get to meet her. Actually, it was just last month in Florida, Clearwater Beach in Florida at the Smart Success PT Live conference and got to meet you in person. So thank you so much for saying yes to being on this podcast. And if you can just share a little bit about who you are for those listeners who've never heard of you before.
Yeah, thank you so much for inviting me. It's my pleasure to be here. So my name is Jessica Drummond. I originally trained as a physical therapist and I became a pelvic expert physical therapist pretty quickly into my career. And I've been focusing on women's health, pelvic pain, sexual health, things like that for the last 20 years or so. And then, after the birth of my first daughter, I experienced a bit of a hormonal crash that we can talk about in a moment. Mm-hmm. But that led me to really broaden my education. And I went back to school and got a doctorate in clinical nutrition. I also qualified as a health coach and teach health coaching and teach nutrition. And I work still with patients in women's health, essentially from puberty through menopause and all of the hormonal shifts that happen along that continuum.
Cool. Awesome. Great. And if you can just, we can just kind of dive right into the first question is just, I know the hormonal shift that occurred, you know, after your first pregnancy. So, what happened there? And, if you can just talk about what was kind of like the catalyst to start making some changes in your life.
Yeah. So up until that point, I was a pretty driven type A kind of person, as many of us tend to be. I was busy. I was career driven. I was, focused on being a student for many, many years and in physical therapy graduate school. And then I dove with similar energy into work. I was seeing patients. I was specializing. I was getting a lot of extra training. I was teaching at conferences. I had a great group around me when I first started in practice of a lot of other women's health specialists and women and new practitioners like myself. I was only about 3 years out of school when I started specializing in women's health. And so we had new people and mentors, and it was a great time in my career. And then my first daughter was born in 2003, which was about 4 years after I graduated from physical therapy school, 4.5 years. And what happened was my symptoms presented as kind of initially getting sick, like, chronic illnesses, sinus infections. One time they thought I had pneumonia. And the fatigue was just crushing. And at first, all the doctors were like, oh, this is normal. Everyone's exhausted. You haven't slept in days, weeks, months, and my first child, she didn't sleep through the night literally until she was about 6 years old. There were some days where she would wake up at 3 a.m. for the day. And I actually thought about going back to work. I was home. I was working part-time after she was born. Then I was home with her for about a year. And then I tried to go back to work because I was so tired. I figured it would be a good rest. and then I never even ended up taking that job, but I found the hospital daycare, which opened at 6 o'clock mm-hmm. in the morning. Mm-hmm. So when Claire would wake up at 3 a.m., I would just, stuff her through that until 6 and just drop her off at the daycare. And then I'd go back to bed. And at that time, I was in a little bit of career transition. We had moved when she was about a year old, and I wasn't sure if I was going to study something different. So I was doing some just education at University of Michigan, which is near where we lived, trying to figure out what my next step would be. But really, the biggest symptoms of that time were intense fatigue, getting every cold and flu that she brought from anywhere, panic attacks, anxiety. I started having trouble even driving. My blood sugar was all over the place, although nobody really caught that. They just saw it as anxiety. Mm-hmm. And finally, 4 years later, after we'd moved again, I had gone back to work full time as a clinical therapist. I was just like, there were days where I was so exhausted. I thought I would die trying to get out of bed, walk into the bathroom. Like, I didn't have the ability to drive my daughter to school. I was in really bad shape. So we moved back to Texas where I was when she was born. And I had worked there in that clinic, that women's health clinic, where I had been mentored for a while. And there was a physician that I knew that we kind of sent all of our difficult patients to that no one could figure out. We thought they maybe weren't following what we were saying, or there was a little bit of, maybe they just don't know, or they're crazy or whatever. Mm-hmm. Before I really understood what that felt like as a patient, because you really do feel kind of crazy. I'm not really sure why I'm so sick. Because I had a perfectly healthy pregnancy, I was a very active person, I was eating fine, but I couldn't sleep, I was exhausted. I was panicking all the time. So I went to see her and I was just like, I don't know, something's wrong with me. Can you help? And she did a test of my adrenal cortisol levels 4 times throughout the day, because there's a normal pattern of cortisol, which is one of your key stress buffering hormones, that it should be, there should be like a burst of cortisol in the morning that wakes you up, gets you out of bed. And then it should pretty steadily, it drops off a bit to lunchtime, and then it steadily declines through to the evening, because you want it low at night, because then you can fall asleep. Cortisol inhibits melatonin, which helps with sleep. So my curve at the time was just low and flat. Mm-hmm. Like, I had no cortisol at all. So anything stressful was being, there are sort of 2 stress buffering pathways. One is cortisol, which is the better one to be using, but you still don't want to be using it too often. You know, our system is designed to be using that. It should stick to that relatively normal curve each and every day. And then sometimes it goes up when we're under some stress. But that's only designed to happen, you know, a few times a year if evolutionarily we were like literally being chased by a tiger, right? Mm-hmm. And because you want that increase in cortisol if you are being chased by a tiger, because it increases your blood sugar, it increases your blood pressure, it helps you run faster, it helps you tolerate if you were to get bitten or something like that. But in day-to-day life, modern life, our stressors are very different. They're like the binging of our phone and work stress and fatigue from, you know, staying up too late or not having a baby who sleeps or things like that. Mm-hmm. And so this kind of chronic stress, the system is not designed to take. And in general, if someone's under chronic stress, the cortisol levels on average go up. But there are a couple of circumstances in the literature and that I've seen clinically where the levels are so bad that they're down. It's just like the system just gave up. Yeah. And it's like, forget it. I'm not even mounting a response. And it's a communication system between your brain, the hypothalamus and pituitary gland, and the adrenal glands, which are these little glands that sit on top of our kidneys. And so in my case, it was low. And the other common cases where it's low is if someone's experienced trauma. Mm-hmm. I also see it low in female pelvic pain, which often is also associated with trauma. So that's interesting. In male pelvic pain, it tends to be high. Mm-hmm. And in other sort of chronic stressors, it tends to be generally high. The other thing that I see commonly clinically, especially in women, and we buffer this with what I call the coffee and wine diet, mm-hmm. is a curve that's flipped. So for people that wake up in the morning really tired and dragging and they can't do anything without their coffee, their cortisol is low in the morning, which is opposite what it should be. But then at night, it tends to creep up and then they're like, oh, I'm a night owl, or let me just watch one more show, mm-hmm. or they can't wind down without a glass of wine. And then their sleep gets messed up and it's this whole sleep circadian rhythm challenge. Mm-hmm. So in my experience, the cortisol was just low and flat. I felt like complete crap all the time. Yeah. And what happens is then there's this other pathway that tries to buffer stress for you, but it's not as efficient. And that involves epinephrine and norepinephrine. So it's, again, from the brain through the sympathetic nervous system. And then if there's a stressor, you get these bursts of epinephrine and norepinephrine. And, you know, if you were to take like an EpiPen shot, right, like your heart rate goes up, you get kind of like, get like a jittery anxious. Mm-hmm. So I was feeling that, you know, anytime some small thing would make me jumpy. Mm. So it was useful information. And now that I know a whole lot more about the physiology of that and some other things, having studied for my doctorate, what probably happened to me was it's very common to have viral reactivations postpartum. It's also very common to have things like autoimmune diseases either pop up or be triggered. And when I was a teenager, 2 or maybe even 3 times, kind of depending on how you define it, I had experiences of mono or Epstein-Barr. And the first time I had it, I think I was a junior in high school or early my senior year. And the doctor's like, oh, you know, you have mono. I was a gymnast. So, you know, I was type A, straight A student. And I was doing gymnastics like 20 hours a week. I was competing. And my brother had strep throat one day and my mom was about to take him to the pediatrician. And every time I would get in the car around that time, I would literally just fall asleep. So my mom was like, what is wrong with you? I'm like, I'm just tired. You know, like she'd be driving me to a meet or a practice or whatever. And I would just pass out. I mean, I wasn't driving. So,
yeah.
But so she's like, you know, I'm going to take Mick, my brother, to the doctor. I think he has strep throat. You're coming with us. Like there's something wrong with you.
Yeah.
And the doctor, I don't know what, I can't remember whether or not my brother had strep throat at the time, but I do remember that they diagnosed me with mono, which is Epstein-Barr virus. So, and they're like, you have to stop competing. You're going to bust your spleen. Like you need to take some time off. And it was a really kind of crazy time of exhaustion that I remember, like deep dreams and all this stuff. I don't know how long I was like out of school and recovering, but it was a couple weeks, let's say. Mm-hmm. And then it happened again later in my senior year at the very end. And I remember the doctor saying, oh, it's really rare. You usually can't get this more than once, but we know now, you know, that would have been like in 1992. We know now that that is not true. You can, you know, once you have Epstein-Barr virus or most any virus, you can quiet it. It goes into hiding and doesn't bother you, but it's not really gone.
Yeah.
And so for me, I think postpartum was another trigger of that. And then on top of that, you know, the sleep deprivation and all of that. So, you know, I think postpartum is a really vulnerable time for a lot of different things and when women need to be super vigilant about their self-care. And so the second baby I had, knowing that I was kind of at risk for this and understanding a lot more what I had to do to kind of get everything back online, the most important probably investment in anything that I've ever made in my entire life, including my degrees and my house, is I hired a night nurse doula for like a month. My mother was there for maybe a week or two. And then I hired this night nurse, even maybe when she was there, for like a month postpartum. And so I could sleep. Someone was watching the baby. My second daughter had a little bit of breathing issues. So we were always kind of worried, you know, we had to be really watching her. And having that support, someone who could just bring me the baby to nurse, being able to take a good month to really recover was the best possible thing I could have done. You know, save your money on all the supplements and all the medications and get some help because postpartum is a vulnerable time from a health standpoint. And, you know, my old boss at Women's Hospital used to say having, you know, and I never even had any C-sections. I had two normal vaginal births, no epidural, nothing. And she said, a C-section is the only major abdominal surgery where you get no rehab. Mm-hmm. And you're sent home within like 48 hours with an infant. So if you have a C-section, this is even more important because there's a lot of, you know, there's more recovery involved.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Thank you so much for sharing all of that. I mean, just listening to your story, there's so many like, yep, that's me, that's me, that's me. Like, you know, with me being like a full-time, you know, grad student and, you know, having had a C-section, I'm currently coming down with another attack of a virus that I got last year. You know, I wouldn't say the best, you know, postpartum support. And yeah, I absolutely agree with you that postpartum time is like so critical, you know, for self-care. And I look at where my health was when I was, you know, before I got married, before I got pregnant, and you know, I feel like I was relatively healthy, and now I feel like I get sicker more often. You know, my daughter got hand, foot, mouth just a week ago. I had it last year, and now I have it again, you know, and like I never used to be that kind of person who would get sick or have all these issues. And yeah, that's why I find like self-care is just so important, but also it's like super hard. And you know, that's why I love just kind of getting an understanding just like how the hormones, you know, play a part and just the physiology as well. Cause I mean, yeah, like you can do all of the whether meditation or yoga or, you know, but there's just also so much physiological stuff that also needs to, you know, and be in balance in order for your overall health to be, you know, to be good. So thank you for sharing your story.
You're welcome.
Yeah. So, I mean, so you have been, you know, in the women's health practice for a really long time. And I know, you know, as a physical therapist and also nutrition. And so I would love to just have you talk about what kind of got you into the nutrition aspect. So I could definitely see, like, at least, you know, the musculoskeletal as a physical therapist and wanting to work with people's pain. But then, you know, I think it's probably a lot of your own experience, you know, being a mom and dealing with a lot of your hormonal issues. But what are a lot of things that you're seeing with some of the women and maybe even men that you've been treating, you know, nutrition wise, that has been pretty deficient, that's been having, you know, a negative effect, you know, in their health?
Yeah. So I, at this point, I almost exclusively work with women. Very rarely will I work with men and kids, but the most common thing that I see really goes right back to what we were just talking about. The ability of the stress resilience system to be maintained during the kind of hardest working years of our lives. And for women, you know, and boys too, this starts really in high school. So my oldest is now 15, and the pressure to, you know, get straight A's and be on a team and, you know, there's so many things they have to do to qualify for college now that, you know, we had to do as well, but the level of intensity wasn't as extreme. You know, and my husband is about almost 15 years older than me. And, you know, he applied to like one college. He had good grades, but I'm sure he didn't have straight A's, like, you know, and he was fine. So it's just a very different level of pressure. And I think that women, girls are not taught from the beginning what a healthy hormonal cycle is. Their hormones are suppressed really early with hormonal birth control for anything from like acne to bad periods, instead of investigating what are those red flags of? Because the quicker we understand the challenges, you know, these kind of red flag signs, then we can really address this at the root. So when I think about nutrition, I think about food and supplements, but I also think about sleep and daylight and darkness exposure and exposure to nature and movement, you know, and kind of mindfulness and calming the nervous system. So if you figure that all of the hormonal systems actually begin in the brain, it's really about optimizing brain health. And the brain responds best when blood sugar is nice and steady, which is impossible to do if you're on a standard American diet and you're mostly eating processed foods, your blood sugar is going to be up and down all day. And blood sugar and cortisol, so insulin and cortisol are sort of opposing hormones, just like cortisol and melatonin. So insulin, when the blood sugar gets too high, shuttles the sugar into the cells until the cells become resistant. And when it gets too low, cortisol has to respond. So let's say you're on the coffee wine diet, and last night you had a couple glasses of wine, or maybe you're not, maybe wine isn't your thing. Maybe it was ice cream, whatever. There was some kind of nightly sugar. Then you go to sleep and you're supposed to have nice steady blood sugar all night. And then that cortisol burst between like 6 and 8 a.m., which just wakes you up normally. Now, if your blood sugar drops too low during the night because you, you know, ate an ice cream bomb, and then your insulin has to rush in and save your life, because if blood sugar goes too high, that's actually a dangerous scenario for your heart and lungs. So the body regulates that pretty tightly. Insulin comes in, brings your blood sugar, shuttles it out as fast as it can, usually dipping it a little too low. So that's called reactive hypoglycemia. Then cortisol will be like, oh no, the blood sugar is too low. We have to bring it back up. And if that happens between 2 and 4 in the morning, which is what I see most commonly, then you'll wake up in the middle of the night. Sometimes women will think, oh, I have to pee or whatever, but it wakes them up. Sometimes it wakes them up in a panic if you're, you know, or your mind starts racing. If that happens, if that's kind of, if you're generally stressed, then it's hard to go back to sleep. Then you're watching the clock. Then you finally fall back to sleep. It's 5:30. And then at 6:15, you have to get up and you're like, oh, you feel like you like got beaten up last night, right? Yeah. So sugar is so key because then it impacts sleep. Alcohol is so key because it impacts sleep. Then in the morning, if we do the same thing, we kind of start on that coffee, which is like another sugar and a bagel or a donut or something like that, pancakes, you do the same thing. You raise your blood sugar too high, mm-hmm. insulin has to save you, drops it too low, cortisol has to save you. And all day long, you're bouncing around. You're starving at 10 a.m., you're cranky at 3. So if you ever feel that like hangry sensation, you know your blood sugar is not stable. And the way I test my students in our class is I say, okay, if I were to give you a plane ticket right now to Paris, which would take about 10 hours by the time you got to the airport and flew there, it's totally free, but you can't eat. Would you be panicked a little bit? So you should be able to go 7, 8, 10 hours even without like eating. Mm-hmm. Otherwise your blood sugar is unstable.
Yeah.
And you can't sleep well at night because mm-hmm. you want to be totally down. So that's the thing I see most commonly is blood sugar is unstable because people are eating sugar, coffee, alcohol, processed grains, but also stress, because stress impacts blood sugar pretty directly as well. It can raise your blood sugar. So again, we have the same response. So we can balance that stress with things like yoga, mindfulness. My favorite technique for meditation is called Ziva meditation because it's designed for busy people and it only mm-hmm. takes 15 minutes twice a day, which I always do the 15 minutes in the morning. I'm not as good about the 15 minutes in the afternoon, but I'm working on it. Okay. But doing both of those things would be really helpful because you're deliberately putting your brain into that kind of turning on the parasympathetic switch twice a day, which, you know, all day long we're in sympathetic, which we shouldn't be. It's like we mm-hmm. should be. So you're deliberately flipping it. The other thing that can help is any kind of slowed breathing. So like yogic 4-7-8 breathing, things like that. Anything that lowers your respiratory rate to anywhere from 6 to 8 breaths per minute. Mm-hmm. That's what the research shows. So we aim for 6 breaths a minute, about 1 every 10 seconds. You know, really slowing it down. Even a little slower would be like a 4-second inhale, 7-second hold, 8-second exhale, which is a common breath in yoga.
Okay.
So deliberately putting the nervous system in that parasympathetic mode through the day. Mm-hmm. And then we also have to address like, what are the actual stressors? Sometimes, you know, you just can't do everything at the same time. Sometimes you have to have the hard conversations. Sometimes you have to move and downsize. Sometimes you have to address your finances. Like you can't breathe and meditate away a deep stressor mm-hmm. that you're unwilling to address. It's totally fine, I think, to bring awareness to it and then think, you know what? I know I need to address that. Let me optimize my physical resilience. Let me eat really clean for 2 or 3 months. Let me do the yogic breathing 2 to 3 times a day. Let me start a walking outside practice. Let me go to bed at 9 o'clock every night or 9:30 and do that for 2 or 3 months to build up your stress resilience before you address the big stressor, you know, the relationship problem, the job problem. That's totally fine. And I actually recommend it because usually shaking up your life is another form of stress, at least in the short term, although in the long term, it'll mm-hmm. be better.
Yeah. Cool.
So to me, it's just the inflammatory stuff that we're eating and the stress are the two things that pretty much everyone can work on.
Okay. And I think that's really interesting because I never knew about cortisol having like such a huge influence with insulin. I think a lot of like cortisol that I've heard about is, you know, cortisol being too high just because like stress levels are really high. And so I think with your experience also that, you know, cortisol can actually be pretty low and also have a pretty, you know, negative impact on the body. So that is definitely a big light bulb moment for me. If you can just the Ziva, if you can just give a really brief description of like what type of meditation that is and also where people can find more information about that. And I can also link that in the show notes too.
Yeah, I can definitely send you a link. It's a technique that was developed by a friend of mine, Emily Fletcher, mm-hmm. and it's essentially meditation for busy people. So okay. 15 minutes and there's no like timer. You learn to just learn internally what 15 minutes is, but actually mm-hmm. I started wearing a watch because of it. It's you just like kind of look at the watch and you're like, okay, I'm done in 15 minutes and you can check it you know, to make sure you're not like falling asleep 30 minutes later. Mm-hmm. You have to sit such that your head is free and your back is supported so that you don't fall asleep. Mm-hmm. So you can't really do it laying down or, you know, whatever, but, or like in a recliner, but, and if you have to, I mean, that would be fine. Like sometimes I'm in an airplane seat and like, you know, there's a head support, it's fine. But the goal is not to fall asleep, to actually mm-hmm. meditate.
Okay.
And the first time I learned meditation actually was during my first health coach training, and I was on bed rest and I was in bed for like 3 months and I would fall asleep constantly, which wasn't bad, but mm-hmm. I wasn't really meditating. So anyway, the first 2 to 3 minutes is like a mindfulness practice where you slow your breathing and you like pay attention to your various senses. Then she has two different ways you can learn it, either through a book she's published or through an online course. And there are mantras that she recommends that are kind of generally applicable. I think she has even an in-person course if you want to really dig deep.
Okay.
She has a studio in New York. And you get a mantra, and which is just a very simple word that you kind of rest your thoughts on. You just kind of keep going back to it. You just kind of keep coming back to that. You pay attention to that for another, I don't know, 10 minutes or so. And then you do a gratitude practice. And then you do a little bit of a manifestation practice, which is basically visualizing like how you would like your day to go and how you'd like your next big project to go, how happy you want your family and friends to be, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. And so then you go into your day, or you go into your second half of your day. So it's not designed to put you to sleep, but obviously anyone who's tired sitting there with their eyes closed for 15 minutes could fall asleep. But so you're not designed to do it like at 10 o'clock at night, but ideally like first thing in the morning and maybe like somewhere in the afternoon or early evening.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I think I'd like to learn more about it. So, and I like that it's also something that can be done in the middle of the day, because I think most people, when they're doing meditation, it's usually a practice that they do, you know, first thing in the morning or before they go to bed. But I think having that nice break, especially for someone who's always on the go or always busy, you know, having that 15-minute break in the day just to kind of recenter, refocus, I think can be really key for a lot of folks.
And that's what really, I think, gives you that productivity edge from it. Because a lot of times people do feel kind of sleepy or grumpy or hangry at 3 o'clock. Mm-hmm. Instead of eating like chocolate and coffee at that time, you mm-hmm. stop and meditate and drink a big glass of water.
Yeah.
The rest of your day is in such better shape.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, no, I definitely will look into that some more. So we know at least this part is part of your self-care practice, but if you can just let us or talk to us about what your self-care routine is like, you know, over the course of a day.
So my days to some extent vary. Mondays and Fridays, I'm doing more writing. So I try to my best to not schedule a lot of meetings so I can mm-hmm. literally like stay in my pajamas or workout clothes. Monday morning. During the school year, my little one goes to the bus stop at 8:30, and then I go to workout class at 9:30 on Mondays. So exercise. So Mondays I do a heavy like strength, like a boot camp, like a HIIT course, a HIIT mm-hmm. class. And then Tuesdays I'm in the clinic, so I don't exercise. I just focus on my energy on kind of getting my clinical work done. Wednesdays I do a long walk around the neighborhood and ideally at the beach. I live close to the beach. Mm-hmm. And then Thursdays I do another HIIT workout that's more strength focused. Fridays I'll either walk, kind of depends. Fridays, Saturdays, some kind of exercise. It could be a walk. If I like the workout they're doing, I'll go work out at the gym, yoga class, something like that. So some kind of exercise on Friday or Saturday. Sunday I go to church. I don't generally work out, go to the farmer's market, get a little nature. Mm-hmm. My morning, when I first get up, pretty much right away, do the meditation, get my breakfast going, get my kids started, take a shower. And during the day, I'm pretty full on, like between meetings and writing and marketing and running the company and meetings with my team and all that stuff. It's pretty busy, but I work from home. So other than Tuesdays when I go into the clinic, so I have a lot of flexibility about, you know, if I need to go sit outside for a while, or if, you know, I definitely stop and eat lunch, although sometimes not until 3, which drives my husband crazy when he works here. Cause he's like, then I'm never hungry to like 7. He's like, when is it dinner? I'm like, So the meditation, and then really just being outside in the light. And I'm very strict about going to bed really 9:30, 10. In the summer here, it stays pretty light out until about 9:30 at the beach. So, you know, that's fine. But I go to sleep at like 10:30, and I almost always read like just light fiction before bed. We turn off the Wi-Fi in the house and just no screens. No, I almost never watch the news or anything like that, except to sort of catch up on the headlines on my phone. I don't really watch TV at all. We were watching, Queer Eye for a while, because that's super cute. My daughter loves that show. But we don't watch like a lot of TV, and we don't watch it at night. We're really, everything goes off for me no later than 8. My kids are younger. My older daughter, who's 15, she sometimes will watch it, but again, I turn the Wi-Fi off in the house at night. So during the school year, that's 10 o'clock late. I like to do it earlier, but they have so much homework. That's not always possible.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah. I'd love to, you know, be able to, you know, spend more time talking with you, just, you know, especially with young kids. And, you know, it's really interesting for me just having, you know, an almost 5-year-old, you know, just how a lot of those self-care practices, how they kind of, how you're also able to like have your kids also be a part of them, you know, as well too. And so maybe that can be another conversation for another time. Cause I feel like, you know, obviously us as parents, you know, we're setting the example, and then having your kids also be able to have, you know, methods or ways for them to be able to downregulate or to manage their stress, you know, whether it's like going through school or going through sports and stuff. So it'd be great to have a conversation with you on that at another time, but we'll just kind of close up. One question that I like to ask all the guests, so just to realize, and obviously, you know, you've already shared a lot of your self-care routine, but obviously that every day isn't always going to be perfect, but if you can just share, like, what is one guilty pleasure that you have, if you have one?
I don't think of my pleasures as guilty.
Okay.
Like required.
Okay.
I don't know. I take pleasure in basically everything. I love even eating dinner at the beach. You know, I love living here in the summer. I like living here in the winter too, but it's cold and snowy. So short term. So I don't know. I love food. We eat healthy, but we cook and we eat and we have friends over. So I find that, and you know, I like to travel, although less for work than I used to.
Yeah.
I like all pleasures. I don't, you know, I don't eat a lot of sugar, alcohol, caffeine, things like that. But sometimes I drink a glass of wine. I really enjoy it. Sometimes I eat coconut ice cream and chocolate, whatever. And I really enjoy it. I feel that women should really embrace pleasure more and never feel guilty about your pleasure.
Yeah. No, absolutely. Thank you. And this is just a quick question, because I know the last time when you were talking about your story, you mentioned Texas, but I know you said you're by the beach. So I know there's no beach in Texas. So where are you living right now?
There is beaches on the coast down in Texas, but that's not where I live.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay.
Like Galveston and Corpus Christi and stuff. Okay. I didn't live there. I didn't live by the beach. I lived in Houston.
Oh, okay. But, all right.
I live currently in Fairfield, Connecticut, which is
All right.
So right by the beach. Okay. On the beach. So, yeah.
Okay, cool. Awesome. Well, thank you again for the wonderful conversation, just for sharing so much of your knowledge. So it's really, really great. So if you can also just share a little bit about where people can find out more about you, that'd be really great.
Sure. No, that's okay. You can find everything about our company at IntegrativeWomensHealthInstitute.com.
Okay.
And we're on Instagram at Integrative Women's Health, and Facebook also at Integrative Women's Health Institute.
All right. Awesome. And I'll make sure I put all of those links in the show notes as well too. So thank you again, Jessica. I really appreciate the conversation.
Thanks so much for having me. It's my pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of The Masterful Art of Self-Care. For more interviews and inspiring stories from men and women like Dr. Jessica Drummond, who are bringing the neglected and seldom talked about parts of our body to the forefront of self-care, please subscribe to our channel on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, or Spotify. Do you have an interesting story to share? If so, shoot me an email at tia@themasterfulartofselfcare.com, or you can direct message me at selfcarephysio on Instagram. If you like what you hear, consider supporting this podcast. You can always visit the link on the show notes to help and make a donation. So as I mentioned at the beginning of this episode, a lot of new things, different things that will be happening, and I want you to stay current and in the know about what will be going on. So definitely consider subscribing to this podcast, just so that you can be aware of all of the latest podcast episodes. I also have a blog post as well, and so if you follow me on Instagram, some of the posts that I write on Instagram, they definitely have a direct correlation with some of the blog posts that are on my website. And so you can find all of that information on my website, which is themasterfulartofselfcare.com. So definitely feel free to reach out. This will be almost about a year and a half that I've been doing this podcast, and it's been really great just to see how much it's grown, how much it's changed. And so a lot of it is you, the listeners, like just being there and listening and being really supportive. And I love to know and get some feedback as to like what helps, you know, what you'd like to learn more about. So definitely please reach out. So just want to close it off with like, let's help make self-care more accessible and down to earth for mothers. So thank you again so much for listening.